Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Trupanion is a proud sponsor of Pure Dog Talk. The Trupanion policy provides medical insurance for pets, helping to cover the veterinary expenses for unexpected injuries or illnesses. Trupanion also has a special program just for breeders, allowing you to send your litters home with a special offer to try out insurance. These offers waive the waiting periods, so coverage goes into effect immediately for your buyers. Puppies can get into mischief, but Trupanion helps to make the unexpected a little less intimidating. There's no cost to you to join, so sign up from our partner page to get started with Trupanion today. And don't forget to mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and we are here at the Harvest Moon Cluster. And I am very, very excited to be joined by one of my dear friends that I have been stalking for 2 years, Mr. Michael Faulkner. And we are going to talk about Golden Retrievers. And I'm very excited because I am just learning to judge Golden Retrievers. So Michael's going to give me the lowdown on how to get this right. And I always want to get it right.
I feel like I've been stalked and now I'm held captive.
You are held captive. We're in a little circle here.
So it's nice to have an opportunity to talk about a breed that I'm passionate about and have been actively involved in since 1969.
Yes.
So I'm the old guard, so to speak, and I'm not that old. And I think first and foremost, we talk about just the name of the breed, Golden Retriever. And that should tell you something right there. And I would think that as a new judge of my breed and a woman of good dog sense, you can immediately mean that they have a coat of lustrous gold and they are a water dog and they should be able to form and function to retrieve.
Yes.
And I think when you look at the general description of the breed, and I think today, how the breed has evolved, they forget this. First and foremost, first paragraph in the standard, primarily a hunting dog, moderate to be shown in good hardworking condition.
Yes.
And with that, it means that there's a reason why they have a double coat and it protects and wraps the body and protects them when they're in water.
Right.
So I'm going to start there because the Golden Retrievers are now known as the pretty breed or the fancy breed.
Fluffy.
Yes.
Yeah, fluffy's bad,
and
right?
And it's not correct.
Okay.
And it's frustrating for me to see, you know, the Goldens are popular. You see a lot of them at the dog show.
Beautiful, sweet, kind.
Yes, yes. And, you know, they'll do anything for you to the point of having to sit for 5 to 6 hours on grooming tables, puppies and older dogs, while they run in and out of the ring. Golden Retrievers were never meant to do that. I mean, back in the 60s and 70s and up to the mid-80s, your Golden Retrievers, we bathed them, put jackets on them.
Right.
And the coat dried to the body, wrapped it, and they were brought out of the crate or off the ground to your side and went in the ring. They were never forced to stand on tables, and that really frustrates me. I always tell everyone who's judging my breed, they're a moderate breed, legs underneath them, and they should think of a cow. I mean, think of that big rib, short loin, legs underneath, thick thighs, level back, tail coming out, sweet nature. And it's not a complicated breed if you keep in mind moderation, loose lead, level back. And I think when you're looking at the standard, a couple things that the standard will tell you what it shouldn't be, but it doesn't tell you what it should be. The Golden Retriever should have an oval eye, a very expressive oval eye.
Right.
They shouldn't have anything triangular or narrow.
And not round, right?
Right, absolutely. And you're never going to see very many round eyes in Goldens. You're going to see basically more of a collie eye or a squinty eye in the breed. And, you know, the gentle arch of the brow, the stop, the back skull, parallel planes, the lip line, full dentition. Mm-hmm. I mean, just that gorgeous head. And to know that it's there for a reason to be able to pick up and retrieve.
And so you've got to have muzzle depth and breadth, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, if you're going to fault, if you have a dog that comes in the ring and you're judging and you have one that is narrow apex and you have a dog that's a little on the heavier side, always go with a dog that's a little on the heavier
side. Air to the heavier side.
Yeah, okay.
That's good.
Yeah, because they do have to carry that bird.
Yeah, and geese. Think about geese. Yeah, I mean, these are like big birds.
Big. Yeah, pick up a 20-pound bag of flour and carry
it.
Yeah.
In your mouth.
And swim at the same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, jump. in and off a boat.
Right. I think that's important. So talk to me about the substance of the breach, the moderate piece. Like, well, there's too much and then there's not enough.
Well, I think
and
it's important to know that we don't want anything sinewy and racy, and we don't want anything to look like Newfoundlands.
Right.
Right. So I think that people that don't know, and let's face it, 85-90% of all the people judging Goldens today do not come from a retriever background or even sporting dog background.
Right.
So you throw these dogs to the whims of the fancy and put on top of it Huff and Fluff. So let's say you take a dog that is to the top of the moderate range, not, you know, a little overdone, and then you put it on the table and then magnify all of that.
Force try it.
Yeah. So then you bring it in and it just looks like a little baby newfie.
Yeah.
And they win.
Not under you, I'm assuming.
No. And I think the biggest thing other than grooming is proportions. And I think, you know, we are 11, 12. And I mean, that is only slightly off square. Mm-hmm. We are not a long breed. The breed has gotten to be very German Shepherd-like in the sense that they're long and lower and they drop down. And they've lost that whole sense of proportion and that even, steady gait that goes around the ring with it.
And I see dogs that I cannot decide if they are simply long-bodied or if they are short-legged or if they are both.
They're both.
Okay.
They're both. And there's nothing more beautiful than to see a moderate golden with a beautiful coat texture. And I'm going to say something that quite often when you're judging my breed, that you're going to see a coat that wraps the body and it may have a slight weight. That's your correct coat.
It's okay.
It is perfect.
So all those times that I spent blow drying that golden retriever coat perfectly straight.
No,
that's totally not necessary.
Not necessarily. You know, it may be necessary for people that are not breeder judges, but we love it when you can see that natural wrap and frame. And if there's a slight wave, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
And where do you draw that line then? So we don't want it to curl.
No, it should never be curly, but wavy is totally acceptable in the standard.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. And I think when you keep in mind the ratio and you keep in mind the length is in the rib, you have the short. And again, I'm going to go back to the reference of the cow. Mm-hmm. Think of a big strip heifer with that big wide loin and that gorgeous thick thigh. Second thigh should be thick, not really long and exaggerated. And the hock should be short, well let down. And what did I tell you earlier?
Yes. I was just going to say, wait, you told me this, that the hock should come straight down from the hipper.
From the base of the tail.
Base of the tail.
Down. Exactly. Anything beyond that, if your hock is up, you know that the problem is they're probably poker straight in the front.
But you're supposed to have a level back.
Level
so
back.
Why are they trying to make it?
Something I've been trying to figure out for 50 years.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to roll. Yes. They're not supposed to lumber. They're not supposed to roll over top of themselves. They're supposed to converge to a center line of gravity. I think people threw the whole fluff and puff and glamorization of the golden retriever, forget that what our standard says is primarily a hunting dog.
And that's important.
It is so important.
And so talk to me about front assemblies, because I don't see it as much as I did at one point in time, but I used to see this little front thing going on.
Well, the problem is we, as golden retrievers, you know, from the 70s to the 80s to the 90s, there were a lot of stud dogs used, and they brought the dogs down, lower station, and they rotated and rounded the whole very, very small dogs in the 80s, 90s, up to the early 2000s. And they were, and I'm going to say that quite often you're never going to be able to go in. If you're going to measure, you're not going to find too many golden retrievers that are oversized. You're going to find a lot of them that are undersized. And what they did is there was
25 inches, am I right? Top of the dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've rotated almost, there was like a dwarf gene in the breed.
Okay.
And they rotated that whole front assembly where they shortened and almost eliminated the upper arm.
Right.
It all came over. They eliminated the length of the pasture and they had these little club feet and they just rolled coming at you. And you still see that today. I mean, it's just not pretty. But you have to get back with the proper height to length ratio. Mm-hmm. Get back to the proper layback of shoulder, a beautiful length of upper arm,
right,
and to allow that dog to function, reach forward, and then bring those legs together. To
well, they have to...
Exactly.
Right? I mean, the rear has to be there, right? Like, I'm always in this breed, I want to see a breadth of croup.
Yep.
Because they're driving with those rear, but that front has got to be there if they're going to break ice or do any of the stuff that this breed should have to do, yes?
Yes. And the other thing, too, is we're going to talk about the... You just mentioned the croup. And I think our standard calls for a slightly sloping croup.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you that that slightly sloping croup should only be noticeable to the eye, to the hand.
Okay.
When the dog is standing, when the dog is locomotion, that top line and that tail should be straight off and going around. It should be one beautiful line and picture, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that slightly sloping croup. Because remember, you have a double-coated breed.
Right.
And that finishes off that line. You're not going to see that. Okay. You're only going to feel it.
Okay. That answers a lot for me because I did a sweeps, and I'm like, gosh, these seem really high for what seems like a sloping croup. But that, no, okay.
It's the hair.
That you helps a lot.
If you have a full-coated golden retriever and you mm-hmm. see a slightly mm-hmm. sloping croup, then I
can tell. Oh, terrifying.
That's the problem.
Okay. Okay, so that's good to know.
Yeah, and I think that, again, too, one of the hallmark traits of the breed, beyond the fact that they're, you know, just great companions and service dogs mm-hmm. and they're beautiful to look mm-hmm. at, mm-hmm. is their temperaments. And, right. you know, they're gentle and they're loving. And they're a gentleman's gun dog. They were never bred to be a frenetic field dog.
Frantic, right.
No. So they were bred to go out with a hunter mm-hmm. and work close to their side, shoot, send them out. Go in the water, come back, you know, for a day,
right.
and then go back, shake, they're dry, they go in and lay down by the fire.
And
none of this spastic temperament that, you know, mm-hmm. because they're breeding them now in order to be competitive, and I'm talking now the field right. dogs, they're right. breeding them to be high-strung
right.
and hyper to be able to compete at that level.
Yes.
And they were never bred to do that.
To compete with labs. I
no.
grew up in field yeah. trial labs.
Yeah.
And to compete with a lab, I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
But I also see and speak to this in the breed, and as a judge, how much am I going to see of this, and how much is someone going to know or care when you see these dogs chewed on themselves, or that, you know, the brains are not what they ought to be, but a really sweet, kind, mellow gun dog?
Well, I think that that has been perpetuated in the way they're presented and the way they're rewarded in the ring by the judges. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds a bit crazy, but up until the mid to late 70s, golden retrievers were never strung up. They were always showed old school top mm-hmm. and tail.
Right.
You had your hand underneath
the chin.
The chin mm-hmm. and you held the tail right out.
And you knelt down behind him,
yes.
and that was
normal. You never pushed the lead up and mm-hmm. forced the head forward and pushed the eyes together.
Up and over.
That never
right.
happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until handlers from other breeds, particularly bait breeds, boxers, dogs,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
came in and started showing the dogs, and they brought that mentality, constantly keeping the dog up, 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 ears up, baiting them,
mm-hmm.
and that was rewarded
right.
time after time after time in the ring, and it alters your breed, temperament-wise. And so now you get dogs that are spastic and high-strung and go out there and fly around the ring and up their toes and mm-hmm. ears up all the time. And I can really tell when I'm watching my breed being judged, I can tell immediately whether they know what they're doing
mm.
if all they're concerned about is how the dog stands and do they have their ears up. Because that immediately tells me, you don't understand my breed.
Mm.
You should be able to go in. I always tell everyone to let them stand on their own. Paramount, let them stand on their own. Loosely, take them around the ring, walk up, take the head in your hand, put the lead down on the base of the shoulder, look at the ear set. Manually lift the ear, mm-hmm. check the setting, and casually let the dog go down and back as a gentleman gun dog should do,
mm-hmm.
and effortlessly, loose and easy, go around the ring. And the minute I see people wanting to bait them like mm-hmm. saddlebreds, I'm like, okay, you don't know what you're doing.
But that's important for us as judges
yep.
to learn some of this, but I think important for new exhibitors too.
Yes.
Right? Coming into the breed,
yep.
let's think about, as preservation breeders,
yep.
preserving.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. I'm so excited. I just can't hide it. Yeah, I know. I promised I was never going to sing again. But I'm saying, our new audiobook is available now. Whoop! Yeah! Pure Dog Talks, How to Stack Your Dog and Other Important Talks, is a 2-CD set featuring early mentoring episodes from the podcast, tips, and previously unrecorded pep talks. This is a power-packed opportunity for folks who don't want to search our exhaustive 260-some-odd episode library for just the topic they're looking for. This 2-hour series is a great resource for breeders and mentors, 4-H leaders, anybody that's looking for a straight line trajectory from what kind of dog should I get to raising a show dog, how to stack and move with your dog, to counting championship points for your new dog. Super easy to purchase. Just drop PayPal $25 a book to Laura at puredogtalk.com and make sure audiobook is in the comments and that your mailing address is included. Because shipping is free, that's on me, and I'll have it to you in just a few days. Breeder and mentor bundles are available. I'll give you a 10% discount on 5 or more, and this is a very limited print run. So get your order in today. May not be here tomorrow.
Talk a little bit more about the coat. We already talked about the wavy. How can you best describe that texture that you're looking for that's really waterproof? When you put your hands on it, what am I going to feel?
You're going to feel, now there's a distinct difference when you look at the retrievers and the cousins and you're comparing coats.
Yep.
The golden retriever coat is longer, the outer coat is longer than, say, obviously, the Labrador or whatever. It has texture. It's not a harsh coat. It's not a wire coat, but it has texture. You can feel it. Mm-hmm. It lays over. And then a nice undercoat that's softer, and it keeps water from the skin. The outer coat has texture to it. It is not a harsh wire coat, but it definitely is not a cuss coat.
Sloppy.
Not at all. And I mean, it's nice. It just has the crispness to it, and it is just beautiful when you get it.
It's not the same texture, though, as, say, a flat coat.
No. The flat coat is much softer.
Softer and almost silkier.
Yes, okay, that's why I was asking. No.
Because that seemed to be...
And then actually, too, the Gold Retriever hair shaft, when you have a coat, it's totally different. It's thicker and denser. It's just totally different.
So, historically, this is a breed developed in Scotland. Yes. And so, very, very cold water.
Not only cold water, but extremely rocky terrain.
Right.
And endurance was essential. And, you know, they had a purpose. They had to go out, and for survival, they took their dogs to do kill back to eat their dinner.
Right.
And they had to work, like, for an afternoon or an all-day shoot, and then come back and be a companion. So anything that was too big,
right,
too leggy, too long and low, they don't function.
Right.
They can't do the job.
And was this a breed more of nobility or more of the average guy?
No, but when to start, Lord Tweedmouth, it was a nobility. I mean, it was definitely a dog that was revered by those who had them, and it wasn't the commoner.
Right.
So, yes.
Right. So, like, wire hair pointers were absolutely the average guy dog.
Yes.
You know, so that's, I think, history to me is so fascinating, and teaching history through dogs is fabulous.
Yes, nice.
Now,
they have it's almost like the Golden Retriever Congress or something, and they go back once a year.
To the castle.
Yes.
I think I saw pictures of it.
And they,
cool.
It was all over social media last year. They had a big 100th of the celebration. Mm-hmm. And it was just beautiful to see all those golden retrievers.
Awesome.
It's a breed that gives everything and asks for nothing. And I think when you have a breed that is so gentle and loving and caring, it allows itself to be abused in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Not abused, like beat up.
No, but it's easy to... Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So, a little bit more on the head. I feel relatively comfortable, but there's a lot of different styles. So there's the flat on top, there's the rounded on top, there's the looks like maybe it was in a vice, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So speak to me about the head.
First and foremost, they're parallel curves.
Mm-hmm.
They have a definite stop. It's not an abrupt stop, like a Rottweiler, but you definitely have a stop. The eye placement, the problem is there's so many dogs today where the eyes are the widest part of the head. And the head becomes narrow in the front. It goes into like a triangle with no chisel or fill. The foreface, obviously, it's a good width to the underjaw,
right.
Full dentition, strong muzzle.
Mm-hmm.
The lip line should be clean. You don't want a big wet mouth carrying a bird.
Right.
And then that muzzle, actually, it doesn't transition into the head and concave and go in. It actually goes into a cheek. And
right.
It actually has the back skull and the under the eye. There's all this work that foreface goes into, and then you have this beautiful cheek, and then from there you go up to the skull. Beautiful eyes, and there's skull
on the other side of the eyes.
Other side. It actually is scalding.
Okay, got it.
You know, and it's important that you have parallel planes. You come up, there's mm-hmm. the eyes, and then there's the most beautiful, beautiful brow. I mean, they have to have a brow, and that defines and, mm-hmm. and just brings true golden retriever expression. And that goes into slightly round, clean back skull, flat, and the roundness is on the side.
On the sides.
With the ears.
Okay.
Okay. And when you see the most perfect golden retriever headpiece, you'll never forget it because right. it's very few and far between. But when they're there, it is absolutely
so pretty.
Beautiful. Absolutely.
And just the soft expression yes. and yes. all of those
and
pieces.
And ear set, you know, the eye level.
At the eyes,
and,
right.
you know, you don't want big, big, nasty, thick,
thick
ears.
Thick, floppy.
No. No.
No, because those are just going to get wet.
Exactly. And they frame. But, yeah. And I think, too, when you're looking at the head, again, take the head in your hand. Mm. Don't let them push the ears
right.
and all that stuff.
Right.
And, you know, we're a breed that teeth are important. And
sides,
yeah. And you know, people forget that missing molars in our breed or missing premolars, it's a serious fault.
Right.
It isn't just a fault,
it's
serious
a big deal.
Fault. You know, dropped incisors, you know, that is acceptable, not preferred, but
right.
it is acceptable.
Right.
But you know, I'm a stickler. One missing premolar, I'm not going to wet my pants over that. But when you got a dog that has bilateral missing molars, you know, that I
big
know.
Old gaposis, you're not trying to swat the bird into their teeth.
And as a breeder, that haunts you for generation after generation. And then you deteriorate the strength of the jawbone.
Mm-hmm.
And then form and function, purpose is great.
Right. So final one, and we started with it, so we're going to end with it. Golden.
Yeah.
So there's a range of color in
there
gold.
Are, and various shades of gold. And I don't want judges to go in and fault judge on color because we have some other issues that need to be dealt with.
More important.
However,
okay.
when you're judging and you have all things equal, let's just say if you're judging especially, you're going to have various shades. And again, our standard allows mm-hmm. for various shades of gold in the United States. England and Canada allow for cream. So I've imported a lot of dogs from England over the years, and they've been very light, and also some lines from Scandinavia. And I think it's everyone has a preference.
A twitch,
yeah.
right.
And I like gold, and I like lighter colored dogs from a color perspective.
Mm.
I don't like Irish Setter Red. And
right, when it darkens it becomes, up to that level.
And it almost becomes brown.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, too, believe it or not, when you get to that really dark color in Golden Retrievers, mm-hmm. I see the pigmentation go to brown.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. I've
Interesting.
And whereas when you go to the cream, the lighter dogs, they have the jet black pigment. The most beautiful eye. Yeah. So I find that fascinating.
Fascinating.
And I've seen, when they get to that muddy brown color, mm-hmm. I've seen the pigmentation around the eyes mm-hmm. and the nose, and it turns almost to this brownish color. It's very
interesting.
But, you know, everyone knows it. I can say it here. You know, I'm not fond of the dark red-brown dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm far more forgiving of the lighter dogs.
The lighter dogs.
Of cream color dogs than I am the red dogs.
See? You learn something new every day.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, and I didn't say anything that they already don't know. So. But not that I haven't put up red dogs.
No,
but generally speaking, I don't want them to be Irish Setter Red.
Right.
I mean, it states it clearly.
Right.
Various
clearly.
Shades of gold.
Gold. Right.
Okay. And what are we called?
Golden retrievers. And it's important, and we had this conversation last night, it's very important that the name of the breed be part of what you're paying attention to.
And if I can say one more thing, too, about grooming.
Yes.
I just want to say that just remember, again, we go back, they're primarily a hunting dog. No hunting dog should have its feet and the nails
So short,
and then scissored so that what nail is there is exposed, and they push the foot way back, and then they shave. It is absolutely, you dishonor a gun dog. And my godmother always told me, a gun dog is only as good as their feet.
Yes.
And I look
they've
at
got to swim.
And they've created this club artificial foot with no pastures. And it's not even cat foot. I mean, it's just awful to look at. And I get so upset when I see the way they're producing and then back brushing and chalking all the hair and creating so there's no pastern and these little stub nubs on the end. And they win best of shows.
Well, I think it's something we all find in our breeds. And the conversation that you and I were having last night is that breeds drift.
Yeah.
And so our job as judges, as breeders, is to try and hold the line.
Yeah, it's true. And I think it isn't complicated. If you just go in, look for primarily a hunting dog, various shades of gold, a retriever.
Not fluffy,
four legs underneath it. It goes around the ring, a level back, tail should be out the back, gentle in nature, at full dentition, a pretty head. It's not complicated. You can do it. And more often than not, in a big entry, if you're new to the breed, don't be afraid to look at that one dog that looks different than all the others.
Yes, that I was just, can we just go to that? Yeah. Andrew Brace talks about this.
Yeah.
But you are notorious for this, and I've watched you judge a lot of dogs over the years, and I see it in my own breed. The right dog often doesn't look like anything else in the ring.
Yep. Yep. Be true to your conviction. Stamp that one, that ideal. It only takes one good dog.
That's right.
One good dog of a breed, you can say, remember that, don't ever forget that, and let that be your ideal. And go in. And if you have 30 in there that don't look like that, and there's one, you
that's
put that,
the one.
You put the one up. You know?
Right.
And then reverse judge from the
right.
others.
And do the best you can.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you.
I appreciate you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.